This is the Counter Rook Rugby Podcast brought to you by the Irish Times in association with Nifty Business. My name is Nathan Johns, and later on in today's show, I'm delighted to say we'll be joined by Ireland's out half, Dana O'Brien. But in the meantime, I'm joined as always on this Monday morning by Gordon Darcy. Morning, Darce.
Morning, Nathan.
Another busy weekend, particularly in Europe, all four Irish provinces in action. Wins for Leinster and, perhaps surprising a little bit, Connacht and Ulster prevailed on the road in the Challenge Cup down in France, although Ulster were probably aided by the now customary Paul Villeneuve red card against Irish teams. And Munster were the sole team to lose in an Irish context as they went down in a bit of a thriller to Northampton Saints over in Franklin's Gardens, meaning it's back-to-back years that they are gone from the last 16. Darce, lots of action, lots going on. What caught your eye over the weekend?
I think the first bit was definitely the scheduling. Saturday afternoon took an awful lot of organisation and logistics to try and watch all of that rugby. What did it start at 12:30 on Saturday or 1:00 on Saturday?
Yeah, lunchtime.
Right the way through, yeah. And I was down in the Viva pitch side with TNT, so it was a great weekend of rugby. But actually, what caught my eye on in the Twitter sphere or the X sphere, whatever way you want to look at it, was one of the offloads from the NRL. And I love to say these things just pop up, and it was an outrageous piece of skill.
Here's Ben Hunt for Sloan. Lomax with an off ball. What have we just seen?
I love the commentary on that.
Oh, it makes it, doesn't it?
I love it. It's just something about, look, this is probably a conversation that you could take up an hour long podcast in and of itself, talking about the virtues of rugby league in Australia and how they market the sport, how it's promoted, how it's treated. Like it's pulling in a lot more eyeballs digitally and in person than rugby union is in Australia, at least. But yeah, look, we always talk about rugby league. Whenever you see like a James Lowe kind of, he's completely in the air and all of his body is over the touchline, but he's managed to get the ball down over the line in the corner. Everyone always says, oh, the rugby league finish. That's a rugby league finish. This is next level, and it is worth taking 6 or 7 seconds out of your day to look at Lomax here. He's playing for St. George Illawarra Dragons. Great name, by the way. St. George Illawarra against the Newcastle Knights, and he's been shunted into touch. And as he's going, he's similar to those finishes in the corner I'm talking about, except he's 5 yards from the line. And he throws this behind the back offload, and it travels about 20 yards straight into his teammate's chest, and he scores. It's one of the most ridiculous things I've seen.
But also the size of the man, we're obviously looking at it here. He looks like he's about 6'4".
Oh, he's massive. Yeah,
he is barreling into 3 defenders around him, and as you said, just throws this outrageous offload. You could have got there's a 1% chance that's going to land, and straight into his teammate, and over he goes for it. And it's the whole spectacle, it's the build up to it, it's the commentators adding into it, and even he is absolutely speechless when they score that try. But this happens so regularly in the NRL. And I know we're not comparing like with like. They have the restart every time, and they can build their shape every time. But there's still, some of the finishes are just phenomenal. But what's also interesting in this is if you look at the clip, is the build up to it. Rugby is becoming very rugby league. You see that you've got the front door option, the back, you've got the big sweep coming around and trying to create those mismatches in the wide channels. How many tries in the Champions Cup had a shape like that in the build up to it?
Well, Leinster's did. Again, if you want to Jameson Gibson Park's, half hour hat trick, it was, Joe McCarthy around the corner after a, ball out the back, and he was a front door, he was a pretty big front door option that was taken, and then there's a back door option and all of a sudden Leinster are in and they score. So yeah, you're right. I'm not sure who did it first. Maybe league did do it first, but it's something that's come into rugby union massively in the last 5, 6, 7 years. But it's impossible to defend. It's not new. We've seen this for a long time. Like you were doing it in your day, I'm sure. But it's the reason why everyone uses it, league and union, is just because if you get it right, it is so difficult to defend.
Yeah, and Bordeaux did one off a tap free or a tap penalty. But I suppose what that, it's kind of smart from Bordeaux, because in a little bit like rugby league, everybody has to condense in around the ball. So you're creating that opportunity to go to get that width on the wide channels. Like the amount of times in NRL, it's all about getting that the winger into making a decision. Does he come up and does he try to hit in, or can they get the 2-on-1 in the wider channels?
This issue of super finishes and very much TikTokable clips that we're getting from NRL, and we get it quite a lot, I want to play you another clip from Southern Hemisphere Rugby over the weekend. This is back to Union. This is Damien McKenzie playing for the Chiefs.
Damien McKenzie's worked himself into a hole and absolutely smashed in the tackle by Anisi. Check this pass out. I know he got smashed, but razzle dazzle. See you later.
Razzle dazzle indeed. thanks, Justin Harrison. He's one of the all-time commentators, I think. He has a way with words, shall we say. But look, this is intriguing because it's actually quite similar. It's also an around the back offload. He's not, you know, it's not in the act of scoring. He's 50 yards away from the try line when he throws this pass. But first of all, the tackle is worth talking about. Before we get into that, though, that kind of, it's another round the back offload. It's another silky piece of skill. It's another clip that's gone viral on social media. I don't necessarily think it's a league thing. I think it's more of a Southern Hemisphere or Kiwi Australia skills type thing more than a necessarily rugby league versus Union, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
And it's the same thing. You know, the example I gave earlier when we looked at, when we talked about a Union context was James Lowe. Like, it's these guys do
just go,
Mac Hansen, you know, Jameson Gibson Park. I know he scored a hat trick on the weekend, but he was incredibly
Orgy.
Skillful.
Are we just listing all the non? Anyway, let's not go down that rabbit hole.
All the best players in Irish rugby who didn't come up through the Irish system. But it's an interesting point, isn't it? As much as during your era, Joe Schmidt came up and placed a big emphasis on skills, etc. These kind of highlight real moments. We are seeing more of them. Even the example earlier I gave from Bordeaux, where they mimicked the rugby league try. That was a guy from the Southern Hemisphere doing that. It's an interesting one, isn't it? We still haven't caught up here with that skill level, have we?
I don't think so. And I think that's the way we play the underage game. And, you know, the underage game is replicating the senior game and, you know, that kind of free-thinking players, and you don't see it. I was down at Lansdowne 2 weeks ago, and you can see that creeping into the club game. But it definitely was there a few years ago, and it's probably been coached out of players, but sure. The skill is outrageous. First thing that stood out for me in this was the haircuts. Everybody seems to have gone for the kind of shaved Mohican kind of thing at the moment. Sean O'Brien had a version of it. McKenzie has a version of it. I just love to know what you ask for when you go in for that haircut. Do you have to show a picture of it? Or
I'm the wrong person to ask that, though. I'm the wrong person to ask that.
But anyway, so
let me know. If you get Damien McKenzie on the phone this week, you can ask him. Let me know what he says.
Perfect. It's just unbelievable. Like, he's got it in his left hand and actually makes it a harder offload by transferring it to his right hand, which means he has to do the round. So I wonder, is that conscious, or he's just gone, oh, I'm going to get emptied here, and just gets it away?
Oh, it's completely unnecessary, though, isn't it? There's no way he can just give that pass normally. There's no way he needs to go around the back.
He's getting emptied one way or another.
Yeah, but he knows what he's doing. He knows, screw it. We'll just throw the pass. Yeah, it's lovely, but it's a bit of probably a coach killer, isn't it? His coaching box, you're going, just throw a normal pass.
For him, no, it's not. I do it, I'd say there's a good chance I'm going to be lined up and shot straight afterwards. Some players have an earned level of respect, and it's not high risk for them. And 80, 90% of what he does invariably comes off. So if that doesn't come off, the coach isn't turning around to him saying, please don't do that again. You know, that would be like counterproductive. He's got plenty of credit in the bank for something like that.
You're saying you never threw an around the back offload in a match?
No, I didn't. I was asked not to throw offloads at one stage.
Well, there we go. That's like you said, that's the conversation about skills and attitudes that we're talking about. Just quickly on this, though, at the risk of bringing the conversation down from a high to a low, I mean, you say he gets emptied. This is a really interesting conversation, because this one of the ways this clip circulated on Twitter was, I think it was Paul Williams, the rugby journalist. He said, look, this clip is being revered in the Southern Hemisphere and reviled in the Northern Hemisphere, because everyone's looking at the shot on McKenzie and there's no arms in it. It is a shoulder charge, and it's not to the head, but it's, let's call it his upper chest, lower neck region. And this clip, for me, if any other clip, sums up the difference between how high contact is viewed in the North versus the South.
I won't disagree with that. I think that definitely exists. You know, they're short, what the guys in rugby league used to call a bring back biff. These, like, the guys in the Southern Hemisphere are short of going, like, you know, it's part of the game. It's not part of the game. What I thought was interesting was the guys from Progressive Rugby, they asked the question, was he wearing a chipped mouth guard? And if he was, did it?
What was the G-force?
What was the G-force into that? I have some sympathy for the tackler in that McKenzie knows he's getting emptied and doesn't engage the tackle. And as a result, his legs kind of continue on. He kind of almost stops, knows he's going to get emptied. So his momentum kind of stops a little bit. See the way his legs go forward. He knows he's kind of braced for that. And it's almost impossible for the tackler to wrap.
He just bounces off him, doesn't he?
He does a little bit. So I wouldn't, you know, I
but it's the height as well, though. That's your ass. You're flirting with danger there.
Yeah, well, that's the baffling bit where just drop yourself another inch or two and you remove that. But that, like, you know, it's not into his head. So technically you can't get out about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd love to see. Unfortunately, the clip that has gone viral is just kind of a rerun of the full time clip. There's no slow mo, so you can't, like, for example, like if he hits him in the neck there, it's still a card. Do you know what I mean? It's like I said, it's upper chest, lower neck. It's hard to see. But anyway, look, it's a clip that's sparked plenty of debate, and the debate that has overshadowed what was a supreme piece of skill from McKenzie. So yeah, a lot of Southern Hemisphere skillful shows on display.
But there was plenty in the Champions Cup as well.
Plenty up north.
We actually had plenty of tries to pick from as well.
Yeah, look, in terms of tries of the weekend, there's a lot going on. Like, we talked about the McCarthy burst around the corner for one of Gibson Park's scores. You kind of nicked my Bordeaux tap play one. That was a good one. Look, let's keep it parochial. Let's go to the Munster match for my favorite try of the weekend. George Hendy, I think he's 21, very young. I think I saw somewhere it was only his third European match. First touch of the ball off the bench, Saints go basically the length of the field off a first phase strike, and that, it wasn't the killer. It was Hendy's second try a few minutes later that was the killer for Munster, but that was just a moment in the game where you're going, right, Munster are really up against it here. And look, Northampton have been a team for a long time now that's been renowned for its backline play. If anything, it was actually their defence and set piece that probably won them the game on the weekend, but they still managed to pull this out of the bag.
Hendy, all on his own. So much to do, George Hendy. Oh, that's so good!
So yeah, another one that you can see in the show notes. And look, again, I'm assuming most people who listen to an Irish Times Rugby podcast have probably seen this try already. But if you haven't, it's definitely worth 30 seconds of your day or so. First phase strike from the 22. If there's not a lot of going on, like, we're talking about, you know, razzmatazz from down the Southern Hemisphere and offloads. This is just very basic, you know, 12 crash ball, 13 outside, ball out the back, and they're away.
My initial one is they're going, it was defendable. And that's from Munster's side of things. It's brilliant execution from the Northampton guys. But you look at 12 and 13 for Munster just get caught in their heels. And as soon as 12 turns in and bites on one of the runners, just opens up.
Game
that,
over.
Yeah, it opens up that 3-on-2 or 3-on-4-on-2 or whatever in the wider channel. And then it's catch and pass.
Well, it's so well constructed, because if you look at who, so the ball out the back to 10, but look, who's outside 10? It's the winger on the wrong flank, so to speak. It's Ollie Slidholm, who is absolutely rapid. It's just very simple. If we get outside here, we've got 10, Slidholm, and then George Hendy. We've got two strike runners and the fullback as well. Ram was there. So you've got your entire backfield. Your best strike runners are running against Simon Zeebo, who for much of the second half was running on
was
one
struggling,
leg.
Yeah, but then that's the bit for me. Where's it going? 12 and 13, why they were so high in the defensive line. Where's it going? You've got all that pace, particularly when there's a kicking option. You're kind of going, surely we should be kind of hedging a little bit of a drift here, and they stay quite high. Now that'll all fig in, they were tired, and there's obviously illness running through the camp, and it was one or two lapses in concentration, and just shows how, when that happens, if you're good enough on the other side of the ball, you can do that. And the length of the field stuff, the catch and the pass. Who's the 12 for Northampton?
The South African guy,
yeah,
Ogengaard.
I don't want to butcher
the pronunciation of his name.
What I love about him is he's got it. He thinks he's going all the way in, and he's like he's running in quicksand. And he reluctantly hands the ball over. He's gone. He's like, yeah, I'm going to get this one, and then realizes he's going backwards, so has to ship it on.
Yeah, it was, I think it was Ram, the fullback, was the one who kind of gave that pass. But yeah, you're right. It was the 12 who kind of went ball out the back. I want to get into that a little bit, because I spend far too much time on social media for my own mental health. Even when I wasn't working on the weekend, actually, I was still scouring to see Munster fans' reaction to the defeat. Because it's interesting. It's always very intriguing to see how a fan base reacts. So obviously, the Leinster fan base was kind of like, oh, it's La Rochelle again this weekend, whereas the Munster fan base was. And the overriding emotion was very proud, I think, of the first 40 minutes. And that was a cracking first 40 minutes. I'd love to see what the ball and play time for that was. But equally, massive mitigation. Ollie Yeager was injured. RG Snyman was sick. Edwin Adogbo is out long term. Loads more injuries that I'm sure we could list. And then, you know, Tadhg Byrne was apparently coughing and spluttering during his post-match press conference. They've all sick all week. So, like,
Craig Casey threw up on the pitch, I think.
Exactly. Like, I somehow missed that. I saw everyone tweeting about it, and Jerry Thornley had that in his match report as well. That's mad. For, like, getting side of sick on the side of a rugby pitch and then playing a game to that intensity.
Anybody with young kids will understand the concept of when a virus or something goes into a creche, it pretty much takes the whole organization down and adds stress to every parent's life. That's what happens in a sporting thing. Like, you're literally living in each other's pockets when something goes through a team. Like, look at RG was out last week. So this is carried over from last week. He wasn't fit enough to play this week.
Obviously, that hasn't helped. And it did. Like, it was the illness, apparently, that it wasn't an injury. It was an illness that cost Snyman. You know, like, Casey obviously played, Byrne played. So Snyman must have been particularly stricken. But look, when it comes to Munster, this is a bit of a familiar theme in these types of games. Once a couple of injuries hit, do they just have an incredible, like, the loss at the round of 16 last year as well, although that was a bit of a thankless task. I think they went down to South Africa away. They were never fancied for that one. Well, for some people, they were never fancied on the weekend either. Is that a case of you're just incredibly unlucky with injuries and illness and you park it and you go, right, we're going to focus on the URC like they did last year? Or at what point do you say Province's depth isn't good enough? It's not there. The recruitment is probably lacking a little bit, or is it more, you know, an act of God? Half of our second rows are injured. Our two biggest second rows in Adogbo and Snyman are injured. Like, where do you sit on the Munster issue? Because depth is a worry, but is it?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a binary.
Yeah, okay.
Outcome. It can be a bit of both. I would say they're very unlucky with injuries, but even at full steam, are they? You know, do they have the quality of depth that, say, whoever's going to end up in the semi-finals have? And going out to the Champions Cup last year absolutely helped them on their URC win. So there's plenty of teams don't have strength and depth to compete on both fronts. And that can legitimately, before I get attacked for being Leinster, that same question can be asked of Leinster now.
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's kind of my... not issue, but that's where I look at Leinster on the weekend, where they got La Rochelle coming again. La Rochelle pulled it out of the fire down in Cape Town over the weekend. But that was the issue for the Stormers. I think they had a 39-year-old loose head in Brock Harris playing 80 minutes because they had no loose head props. Someone else in their pack.
How can a South African team not have
it's
a
bizarre, isn't it?
They grow on trees down
bizarre.
There.
Yeah, but poor old Brock Harris had to play 80 minutes, and just that last 25 minutes of that game, Stormers forwards are dropping like flies. I think they had 3 HIAs or something like that. There was the Wilt Skelton clip where he actually protected the Stormers captain from almost single-handedly stopped a 3-man collision from hitting him.
I think he was also taking a little bit of a breather himself and just happened to be there. Skelton looked like he was blowing hard.
I'm not a cynic on that one. But anyway, but there was an Evan La Rochelle Brawl on their bench. Massive forward power. We've seen it against Leinster 3 or 4 times now over the years. That second half where they bring on that power, it just changes the game completely. Stormers didn't have the depth to deal with it. It cost them, even though Manny Leibach did have a kick to win it at the end. Do Leinster. It's like we saw what happened last year in the final. They rushed out into a 3-score lead, and at the end of the day, they just, you know, they kind of got scrummed off it in the last 20 minutes, mauled out of it, and they just didn't have the forward depth to deal with that. Do they have it this time around?
Well, we're going to find out, I suppose. It's the dual front. So Leinster have come unstuck the last couple of years in the URC as well as the Champions Cup. So it used to be we didn't win the Champions Cup, we'll win a URC or a Pro 14 title. And now it's like, well, that's not that easy anymore. Not that that's easy, do you know what I mean? But it's like the team they put out last week was reflective of a team that wants to put themselves in a position to win if the Champions Cup eludes them. Or, you know, they come unstuck this weekend, that they're not that they've got two eyes firmly on the URC.
Well, they had lots of injuries, didn't they? I think when they do their Monday injury bulletin, I think Frawley, Porter, a few others, Henshaw, McGrath, they were all, Jimmy O'Brien, they were all questionable. Now, half of those guys came through, half of those didn't. Ringrose, there's a bit of hope that Ringrose and O'Brien kind of pull through this weekend, but that's not really where Leinster are going to win and lose this game. It's going to be
the biggest issue is Porter. You know, Porter coming off. Porter and James Ryan being off. So, like, Leinster with no injuries, and you're looking at that going, could you know, Porter, Sheehan, Furlong, James Ryan, Joe McCarthy with Jenkins on the bench, potentially a 6-2 split.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think they can do a 6-2 split now because Ryan's not there. Like, they could have done a 6-2 with Maloney and Jenkins on the bench, right?
But
Ryan's not fit. So Maloney's, if we're going to base on what happened on the weekend, you want that line-out operator, especially against a French team where Leinster's set piece is so crucial to their attack. So Maloney's probably going to start with McCarthy. They need that line-out guy. Jenkins is on the bench. Conan's on the bench. Who's that extra forward? Who's in that Leinster squad that's ready to come on and be an impact player in this big match?
True, yeah.
There probably isn't really. There's a couple of lads, you know, from the 20s and previous years who have been big impact ball carriers, but they haven't played much this season. They haven't played at all in Europe. Like, it's a big ask. I agree with you. I think if they have the cattle, you have to go 6-2 against La Rochelle. Yeah, it would have.
But now it's just saying that's been taken away from them.
That injury to James Ryan is huge. It's absolutely massive.
Now could be.
I think he did come back on because Healy limped off, didn't he?
Yeah.
So Porter did come back on. So I think that was a promising sign. But you're right. He did limp off only to then come back on. So.
Okay. Well, then that was just get him off.
But Healy's really, really important to me because, you know, he's going to have to try lock down that scrum for the last 10, 15 minutes
of
that game.
And then failing him would be Michael Milne.
It would be Mikey Milne. Yeah.
You know, and it was a performance from Leinster that looked like they had one eye on somewhere else.
Do you think?
Yeah. It was stop-start, Leicester. You know, it was watching Leicester and there was absolutely a point just up until Robbie Henshaw's intercept where you were going, oh, if these guys score now, the what-if scenario was potential to unfold. But realistically, when you look back at the match of the in a whole, pretty much any time Leinster put the shoulder to the wheel, they managed to find a score.
They were incredibly efficient. Somebody, I was at the game, I wasn't at the game in a working capacity. I went as a punter and someone behind me, probably the most insightful bit of analysis from the weekend I've ever either read, listened to, or heard from punters was, God, any time Leinster make a line break, they just score. They were ruthlessly efficient. I think Gibson Park is a big part of that. His support play is excellent.
Let's just caveat that now with the covering defence for Leicester was abysmal. Some of the defensive reads, it was like, wow, that was very, very poor. You could see players actually putting themselves in a position so they couldn't tackle. I was like, oh, okay, fair enough. You're not going to get that freedom against La Rochelle. So like the increase now, the challenge goes up. They have to make home advantage tell. They're going down to Cork now this week.
Roger's taking them home.
Yeah. Get the, you know.
Red carpet treatment.
Yeah. And then one of the things, that's 2 weeks on the road. You know, when they would have gone down to Stormers, probably would have gone down Wednesday last week. Have to make that
fatigue. It's a hell of a
lot of travel. Yeah, they have to make that fatigue count against these guys. So high tempo, high pace, super accurate, and not get into an arm wrestle. And then whatever magic sauce they have in defence, they will need to.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it?
Double down on that.
That's the thing. Their defence worked brilliantly in that game in December in the swirling rain. It was a monsoon. But that was
the defensive game. That was
because of the weather.
Yeah.
But the thing is, La Rochelle always do that to Leinster. They just shut down Leinster's attack and don't really offer a lot themselves. It'd be interesting to see now if Leinster continue and pull in another performance where they shut down La Rochelle's attack, which is already limited against Leinster because La Rochelle are more worried about disrupting Leinster than creating things themselves, I think. Now, granted, that was aided by the rain.
Two negatives doesn't make a positive, or two wrongs doesn't
something
make a
like
right.
That. Yeah, but it'd be interesting if the weather holds and it's not a monsoon. Yeah, I think Kathleen's blown over, so hopefully there isn't another storm this weekend. You know, what do La Rochelle do to counter that? I think it's pretty simple. I think they double down and they go back to that power game and they say, if it's close in the last 20 minutes, we're in the game because we'll overpower them in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, they also have that individual threat across the board.
Yeah.
You know, Ter Barlow and Will Skelton. You know, you look at what Munster missed over the weekend, which was that offloading game that RG brings, that he just changes the game for you. Will Skelton does that for La Rochelle time and time again. And they have, you know, plenty of either it's Doolin at full back, whoever.
Dibbin Lades in the way.
Whatever one of the, yeah, whatever. Sweetenny at whatever 13. Two or three of the, you know.
That's the other thing we should mention is that this is going to be the most ruthless test of Leinster's attacking breakdown they'll get, as it is every year when they play La Rochelle. Dante is a threat. Bavani Bhatti is a threat. Even Skelton to an extent. He does not a jackal, but he just disrupts.
Well, I wouldn't. It is definitely a test of their attacking rooks. It is going to be a test of their attack pattern as well, because the Leinster attack hasn't been as fluid as it has been in other years. It doesn't have the same potency. Like Leicester's defence, it was pretty porous when and Leinster went through them with training moves. That's not going to be good enough against... they can, but they need their defence to be much more fluid than it has been, and it hasn't clicked a lot of times this season.
Will they do it? Will they finally beat La Rochelle in a knockout game? Do
you think? Well, I desperately want them to.
I know that. I knew the answer to that before you walked in the door.
I don't know, I'll be honest. This is one of those games where you put yourself into the changing room and you go, yeah, you have that inner belief, you have that confidence in your teammates and your own approach, but you're playing against a team that's equally has it. It's really hard to call this. There isn't much in this game, regardless.
Very quickly, I wanted to ask you on this because we talked about him the week before, and obviously given the positional interest, if Gary Ringrose is fit
on the wing,
you keep the midfield as it is, the heft of Osborne and Henshaw.
No, not heft. I think one of the best touches of the weekend was Jamie Osborne's inside pass to Ryan Baird. We're struggling for a right winger. That's where, if he's fit, he would add an awful lot to Leinster if he was able to come back in. And I think the back line then suddenly looks a little bit more interesting. But no, I wouldn't be splitting up. I wouldn't be rushing to move Henshaw out of 13 at the moment.
Right. Well, we will take a break there. When we come back, I'm going to chat to Ireland's out half, Dana O'Brien. Welcome back to the Counter Rook Rugby Podcast, brought to you by the Irish Times in association with Nifty Business. My name is Nathan Johns. Following the down weekend in the Women's Six Nations, I caught up with Ireland out half Dana O'Brien. Ireland, of course, are 0-2 so far in their campaign after a pretty convincing defeat away in France, followed by a very, very narrow defeat at home to Italy in front of what was a record crowd at the RDS. I started off by asking Dana what the emotions were like in camp after that defeat.
Yeah, so we were training last week before we had the weekend off, and we kind of took it as an opportunity to reflect on the game, and we did a lot of analysis and kind of gave each other some honest feedback. But I think, like, overall, we had a lot of learnings and it was a good week, and we had a chance to implement those learnings in training. So yeah, overall, I think we regained some confidence over the last week or two.
Talk to me about that analysis, because I think it's always really interesting when you kind of look at kind of players going from the AIL to maybe, you know, playing for the Wolfhounds as yourself did, or maybe Interpros, whatever, and then taking another step up to Ireland, and obviously where there's probably more resources and more fellas with cameras following you around. So like, what's that process like during a week like this, especially during a down week? Like, are you doing one session, two sessions, multiple sessions? Like, how much time are you giving to a match like that after the fact?
I think it was last Tuesday morning we came in, and I suppose we'd split into our units and review it as a back line, and the forwards would review like set piece and structure and stuff. And it's kind of like, then we come together as a team review. So it just gives us an opportunity to look at our specific roles as a backs unit and a forwards unit, and then how we can tie that together as a whole team.
What about your own specific role? Was there anything in particular you took out of that game that kind of, you know, something that either was new or something you kind of maybe thought that you might be identified in after that Italy game?
Yeah, definitely there was lots of learnings. I was moved to full back during that game, so that was kind of a new sort of exposure for me. And a few things that we cleaned up on over the last week. But I think overall it was a game that could have swung a different way on another day. Like, we had like 69% territory and 56% possession. So I think, like, it was just cleaning up on the finer detail over last week and how we can bring that into Wales this weekend.
Have you played much fullback before?
Not much. I've kind of played 10 for all my career. So
was that bizarre, daunting? What was that like? Just, you don't really get time to think about it?
Yeah, it wasn't really a big deal. Like, I kind of play in the backfield anyway as a 10, so it's very similar to playing fullback. So it wasn't a huge issue on the day.
You said something earlier that really interested me. You kind of talked about trying to build confidence from the reviews and learning, and that confidence word is really interesting, because I think after the match, we were chatting to your head coach, Scott, and he kind of said, we were like, you know, you had so, like you said, you had so much possession, so much territory in the first half, especially. You just needed that killer instinct. And we kind of asked him, how do you get that? And he just said, look, it's probably a confidence piece. And he just, he wants to see you guys being a more confident side. How do you think you get to that stage where you are that confident and you are able to maybe have that more of a killer instinct?
Yeah, definitely. I think last two games against France and Italy, like, we've put out some better performances, and it's just about converting those performances into winning performances. And as you said, like, it's kind of having one shot, one kill attitude. And yeah, that's something we're working on in training, just having clarity around how we can execute when the moment is right and how we keep momentum in games. And yeah, I think it's just about building confidence in training and then transforming that onto the pitch.
Is it almost a case of you need a game where everything like that, like, for example, I think a lot of people would look back to that Italy game and think of, you know, hand and errors in the 22 or stuff like that, or things going wrong. Is it just a case you need a game, not so much a training session, a game where those last passes stick? Do you know what I mean? People, you know, go into big collisions and they hold on, or that last offload goes to hand, or maybe they don't throw that last offload if it's not on. Is it just a case of you just need those one game where those skills stick and then all of a sudden things kind of click into gear?
Yeah, I think you could be right. Like, it's as I said, it could have been a much different and better result against Italy. I think we put ourselves in the right places and we had the right opportunities. But as you said, it's just about executing those. And I think we're very close to it all coming together.
What about your confidence in your own game, in your own kind of personal, maybe game management side of things out half? I mean, Scott, again, you speaking before the game, he called you a games playing out half, which I assume means that, you know, distribution kind of attacking out half with so a decent kicking game in there. Where are you at with your game at the minute? What do you see as your areas of strength and what you bring to the table?
Yeah, I've grown confidence over the last 6 months. You know, we had three good wins in Dubai, and I think, like, I've found my feet within the team, and I have good connections with everybody else and kind of play to their strengths as well. So yeah, like, you know, there's always room for improvement, but I think we're going in the right direction as a team, and I think we have a lot of clarity in the squad as well, which is a good thing.
How much of those connections are helped by your club game? Because I think I'm right in saying yourself and Aoife Dalton inside you're both Belvedere, that's right?
Yeah, that's right.
So
yeah.
How much are those connections important from the club, and then kind of you're building more and more connections, like playing for the Wolfhounds, for example, and getting more and more games in there? Like, do you feel like more of those connections with different players are starting to be built?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, 100%. I think, like, the Celtic Challenge was a good period to really have good game exposure and link up with players that we're going to be training with in camp. As well as the centralised programme, it just gives us an opportunity to learn how our teammates work around us and how we can play to each other's strengths. So yeah, definitely playing together is a huge benefit when it comes to campaigns like these.
And what about playing together with different captains? Because obviously as the out half, you're kind of centrally involved in a lot of decision making, particularly, you know, in terms of maybe when you get penalties, points, corners, etc. Like, is that a process as well? Like, obviously you're with Sam now, and she was the captain last week. Like, developing those relationships and building those conversations, and kind of maybe having the wherewithal to, I know you're quite young, but to pipe up and say, yeah, I'm going to take this kick, or yeah, I'm going to go to the corner here. Is that something that also is developing?
Yeah, definitely. We have a strategy group. We implemented that in Dubai, and it's kind of like a group that works with the coaches and builds a strategy going into a game week. And yeah, it's definitely proven well, like, to come up with our own game plan that aligns with the coaches, and to be able to transform that on the training field and bring it into the game at the weekend. It just gives us that extra layer of clarity and make sure that we're all on the same page when it comes to the game.
That sounds like it's kind of like a senior leadership group, is it?
Yeah, it's more for game strategy, so okay. It'll be rugby focused.
Okay, so what, not 9, 10, captain, couple of others? Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah, depends on selection, depends on the game, but yeah, usually those roles.
Okay, interesting. After that Italy game, I think it's interesting because when people talk about kicking to the corner or kicking for posts, I think hindsight's a beautiful thing, isn't it? I think a lot of people use the example of the first half, maybe, where you decided not to go for three in front with what could have been a gettable kick, and then the wind kept the kick to touch in. I think a couple of minutes later, Italy were scoring, and looking at that as a big point swing. When you go back and you sit down and you review those types of decisions, is it a case of, presumably you try and take the result out of it almost, and you try and go back and analyze like the decision making, like was the decision the right decision at the time if the execution wasn't quite right? Is that a fair way of characterizing it?
Yeah, definitely. As you said, like hindsight's a great thing. Like when you're in the moment, you kind of feel like you're making the right decision. Yeah, it could have been the correct decision to go for the post, but at the time, I think at the stage in the game, we just wanted to show a bit of dominance, and unfortunately it didn't pay off, but you know, it could have went a different way in any other game. So it's kind of, yeah, just reviewing that decision, and maybe in hindsight, it could have been better to take the 3 points.
We're talking a lot about kicking here. I wanted to ask you about your GAA background. Right, so you played for Carlos. So at what age did that kind of get shunted to the side for rugby?
I kind of played rugby and football growing up since a young age. For a while I didn't have to choose between the two. Like, it kind of worked out lucky that they were just on different nights, so I stayed going at both. I played county football for 2 years, and then when I was called in for the Japan tour, I had to kind of give it up for a while, and unfortunately I haven't been back since.
Oh wow, okay. So it was that close to your international career. That's mad. So presumably, like, that must have shaped your game massively in terms of like the type of athlete you are and your kicking game and etc. Like, can you give me a bit of insight there into the kind of the crossover skills between the two?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's probably helped my kicking game, is probably the obvious one. Like, I used to play corner forward, so I probably like kicking points and taking free kicks probably transfers over to rugby, whether it's like kicking for the line or crossfields, whatever, kicking for the post. But it's good. It's a good skill set to bring over to rugby. And I think it has influenced my game.
The mental side of taking frees and that pressure, presumably. So that's nothing new for you with place kicks.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, bang on. Okay. In terms of Scott's been in there, what, since July, I think? So you've had a couple of campaigns on him, or a campaign and two matches under him now. Is there anything him and his coaching staff, are they asking anything different of you now? Are they trying to develop you in a different way? Like you said, you're a ball-playing 10 earlier. Like, is there anything new that he's trying to bring to your game, or is he more so focusing on your previous strengths?
Yeah, I would say Scott he sort of backs me to play to my own strengths. I would say the introduction of Declan Danahy, our new defence coach, he's probably trying to add in another level of skill around reading the defence and stuff. And not much probably changed from the coaching staff, but they kind of support us and our strengths and how we can complement each other.
What type of stuff is Declan getting to do? Like, are there certain cues he's getting to look for in defensive sets, that type of thing?
He's kind of just asking us. We've had conversations about flipping the idea. So if I was in attack, how would I think in this situation, and just how can I defend like an attacker, and reading certain pictures. So yeah.
Okay. Is that help? Has that been helpful for you?
Yeah, definitely. He's a great coach. He's worked on loads of stuff around collisions, reading the backfield, and I think our defence is really improving since he's came in.
Okay, interesting. What about, the other thing that kind of came out from the Italy game was kind of talking about the experience of the side, and, you know, maybe in a couple of moments, a bit more experience might have helped in different areas. There's a pretty experienced name that's just come back into the fold. Look, I know there's been a lot that's gone on with Cliona Maloney in the past, but just, I know she's only just back in, but like, from training and being back in the environment, like, how much of a boost is it to have someone with the level of rugby that she's played back in there helping you all and presumably playing a big role?
Yeah, definitely. She's had an outstanding season with Exeter Chiefs, and she's been playing well the last few years. So yeah, we're very happy to have her in. I met her this morning, and yeah, the vibe is good. So yeah, it's, as you said, it just adds another level of competition within the squad, which is great. Like, we go after our training ID and train to compete and compete to win. So yeah, I think she's going to bring huge benefit to the squad.
Finally, talk to me about Wales then, this weekend down in Cork. And it's a place you played a lot over the last year down in Cork. I mean, almost beyond just the motivation of finally trying to get a win on home soil for yourself. I mean, what else is there that kind of maybe might fill you with confidence, or the direction that the side is going that might point to getting a result on Saturday?
Yeah, we've had a good training week last week, and we're lining ourselves up to have another intense week before Wales. It's a massive opportunity to go down to Musgrave in front of a massive home crowd. And like last weekend, it was just so uplifting to play in front of 6,000 people in the RDS. So like, we're super excited to go down to Cork and yeah, hopefully get the win against Wales.
Does that take any adjusting, the crowds, going from playing in Ollie Campbell Park with Belvo to playing in front of 6,000 people, or probably was more than that down in France, wasn't it?
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of, I feel for me, it just gives me another level of energy. It's kind of, you know, a motivator in over in France. When you silence the crowd, you know you're doing well. And over in the RDS, when you hear them all roar, you know you're doing well there. So yeah, I think it's just an unbelievable opportunity to play in front of big crowds. And I'm just really proud to have the chance to go out with the team and perform.
That's all for today. My thanks to Dan O'Brien and, of course, to Gordon Darcy. As always, this episode of The Counter Ruck was sponsored by Nifty Business and produced by John Casey. Please do leave a rating and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And after we discussed the clips of the weekend at the top of the show, if you think there's anything we've missed or anything you want to send our way after the weekend's rugby action, please do drop us a line at rugbypod@irishtimes.com. The Counter Ruck will be back next week.